At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
If you stop and look around your city today, you see the municipal traffic sensors, right?
Yeah.
High-resolution commercial satellite passes overhead, citizens tracking their steps, their drives on countless apps.
Right. And now imagine all that really specific, almost mundane commercial data.
Right.
You know, the flow of cars, the exact shape of every roof, the instant location ping from a sensor.
Okay.
Imagine all that being combined and then processed by some pretty advanced AI.
What you get then is something else entirely. A new kind of intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, ISR. And it's pervasive.
Exactly. And the crucial point here is that this isn't just governments building this capability anymore. It's emerging almost organically from the convergence of all these commercial technologies that are already sensing the modern city. It's happening fast.
So today we're doing a deep dive into our sources to unpack exactly how these pieces, commercial satellites, app data, city sensors, AI, are merging, how they create this really high-resolution, often open-source view of what's happening in our cities.
It's like a shortcut to situational awareness, really. And it highlights both the immense power of this data stack, but also the potential dangers, the peril of it being so readily available.
Our mission is to illuminate this complex picture for you. This is the Security Nexus Deep Dive.
And for more insights into strategic security policy, you should definitely visit thesecuritynexus.net.
Okay, so let's start right down on the ground level. Smart cities. The basic idea, using information and communication tech ICT to manage city resources better, yeah.
Right, but what's interesting, and our sources point this out, is the shift. We're kind of moving away from those big one-size-fits-all smart city-in-a-box solutions that corporations were pushing for a while.
Uh-huh.
Now it's more about integrating the messy, complicated, diverse infrastructure that cities already have.
And this is where the citizen gets involved, right? This prosumer idea.
Yeah, exactly. Both consuming services and actively producing data. Oscar Peña, Oscar Belmonte, and Diego López de Piña really highlighted this vision for a project called IES Cities.
Mm-hmm.
Their point was that smarter cities come from blending open government data, deployed sensor networks, and active input from citizens through their phones, their apps. They become producers.
Which must create a huge data headache trying to make sense of it all. Structured data from the council, unstructured stuff from websites.
Oh, absolutely. A major challenge. The IES Cities platform, for instance, had to be built specifically to handle that mix, adapting structured data, unstructured text, even social media feeds.
Can you give an example of how that worked?
Sure. They mentioned Zaragoza's Complaints and Suggestion Service. That relied on really formal semantic data formats, stuff like SparkQL, RDF, JoReport 3. Very structured.
Okay, technical stuff.
Yeah. But then contrast that with Castellón's Bicicleta's bike sharing app. The data about where the bikes were, that was just provided as like regular HTML on a web page.
Yeah.
Human readable.
Wow. Okay. Big difference.
Huge difference.
Yeah.
So the platform's core job was to bridge those gaps, translate between formats so these very different data streams could actually be used together.
Got it. So to make this less abstract, let's look at the hardware. How does this sensor idea look in the real world? Like the Avero Tech City Living Lab, ATCL, in Portugal. Pedro Arrito and his colleagues detailed this one.
Right. The ATCLO is a great example of the physical layer. It's a network of, I think, 44 strategic access points. These are smart lampposts or maybe wall-mounted boxes.
Connected how?
Connected with fiber optic cables and these high-speed millimeter wavelengths. So very high bandwidth.
And loaded with tech, I assume.
Definitely. They have these multi-protocol radio terminals. Think of them as universal translators for wireless signals. They handle 5G, 4G, IHG5 for vehicle communication, Wi-Fi, even LoRaWAN for low-power IoT devices.
So they can talk to almost anything. And packed with sensors, too.
Oh, yeah. Mobility sensors like GPS, traffic radars, LiDARs and laser scanning things, plus video cameras, and environmental sensors, too.
But here's what seems like a really critical shift, strategically speaking, the edge computing. They're processing data on the lamppost.
Exactly. The ATCLL uses things like NVIDIA Jetson devices, powerful little computers right there at the edge.
So instead of sending raw video footage back to some central server.
Right. They're running pre-trained AI models, like Yola V3 for object detection, directly on the device. They identify the car or the person right there in real time.
How much faster does that make things? Forgetting actual intelligence, I mean.
It makes it almost instantaneous. The latency basically drops to near zero for that initial understanding. You sense it, you process it, you understand what it is right there on the street corner. No waiting for data to travel across the network to some big data center. That's a game changer. Okay. So if the ground layer gives us that real-time flow and the local understanding, the overhead layer, the satellites, provides the precise map, the geometry of everything in that flow.
And this is where AI really flexes its muscles, right? Turning basic satellite pictures into super detailed, actionable information. Building extraction seems like a key example our source is focused on.
It is, because knowing the exact footprint and potentially height of every building is fundamental infrastructure awareness.
So let's look at the challenge first. Using those lower resolution, publicly available satellite images, maybe coarser than 0.6 meters per pixel, S. Chen and his colleagues tackled this.
Yeah, they proposed this interesting four-step framework. It included things like normalizing colors between images and, crucially, image super resolution before they even tried to extract the buildings.
Super resolution. So using AI to basically sharpen the image, make it look higher res than it actually is.
Exactly. Techniques like Real ESR-GAN. And this wasn't just cosmetic. They showed in Hyogo Prefecture, Japan, that doing this sharpening step first actually improved the building extraction result.
How much better?
Quantifiably better. They got about a 3.0% increase in the number of buildings detected and a 5.0% increase in the total area of building footprints extracted, simply because the AI had a cleaner, sharper input to work with.
And the AI model itself was powerful.
Very. They used an improved version of Mask RCNN based on something called a multipath vision transformer backbone. It achieved really high F1 scores, that's a measure of accuracy, hitting 0.81 for suburban areas.
Which is pretty remarkable accuracy, especially starting from lower resolution data.
It really is.
Yeah.
Now, if you need even more precision, the name of the game, according to Ksenia Bittner and her co-authors, is fusing different types of data together. Multi-feature fusion.
Okay, what did they fuse?
Their system, called FuSe FCN4s, took standard color images, RGB, and the sharper black and white panchromatic images. But then they added the normalized digital surface model, the NDSM.
Right, the NDSM, that's basically the height map, isn't it? Shows how tall things are relative to the ground.
Exactly, it captures the elevation. And by fusing the regular images with that height information, they significantly boosted the accuracy of outlining the building footprints.
Especially for tricky shapes, I imagine. Small buildings, complex roofs.
Precisely. Things that often confuse AI models looking only at a flat 2D image. The height data helps sort out those complex urban shapes much more effectively.
And then for the real 3D view, there's the work using multi-view high-resolution imagery, right? Ringsing Zuo and his team looked at this.
Yeah, using satellites like ZY3 that capture images of the same area from multiple angles as they pass over.
What's the advantage there?
The multi-view perspective inherently captures 3D information, the shapes, the heights, the sides of buildings that you just completely miss with a single top-down view.
Makes sense.
So they developed this AI called the Cross-Angle Propagation Network, or CAPNET. It's specifically designed to exploit all that context, the spatial layout, the spectral colors, and the angular information from the different views.
And the result?
Superior performance. It does a much better job of preserving the overall shape of built-up areas and keeping the edges sharp and accurate. From a strategic perspective, think about instantly getting the precise 3D geometry of critical infrastructure.
Okay, this all sounds incredibly powerful, but also really expensive. Training these huge AI models usually needs massive amounts of carefully labeled data, right? Someone has to manually outline all those buildings for the AI to learn.
That's traditionally been the bottleneck, yes. Huge cost and human effort for creating that ground truth data. But that's where some efficiency gains are coming in, which is fascinating.
How so?
Our sources' detailed work using things like Stack Autoencoders, or SAE, combined with semi-supervised learning SSL. They applied this to near-infrared satellite images.
Okay. What does that actually do?
Essentially, it allows the AI to learn from a massive amount of unlabeled data by estimating soft labels for it.
Soft labels, so machine-generated guesses instead of perfect human labels.
Exactly. The AI figures out patterns and makes its own informed guesses for most of the data, learning from just a tiny fraction of human-labeled examples.
And how well does that work?
Amazingly well, actually. This approach achieved classification performance that was close to methods that rely on super expensive high-precision LiDAR data. But get this, it only needed less than 0.08%, that's 0.08% of the total data to be manually labeled ground truth.
That's barely any labeling at all.
It's a massive cost reduction. You're essentially getting performance approaching LiDAR accuracy, but using much cheaper satellite data and vastly less human annotation effort. That makes this kind of large-scale analysis commercially viable.
Okay, so we've got the ground sensors feeding real-time data processed at the edge. We've got the overhead satellites with AI extracting incredibly precise features. But you need to connect all this, right? Especially globally.
Absolutely. All that intelligence needs a transport layer.
Mm.
And that's where satellite IoT comes in, building that global connectivity backbone.
And the big shift here is towards LEO, right? Low Earth orbit satellites. Marco Centinaro and his colleagues mapped this out.
Yeah, the industry is moving very quickly towards LEO for these Internet of Things services. LEO satellites fly much lower than traditional ones, maybe 160 up to 1,000 kilometers altitude.
Which means they move fast.
Very fast, about 7.8 kilometers per second. Compare that to the big geostationary, or GEO, satellites way out at 36,000 kilometers.
And the latency difference is huge.
Massive. GEO has a minimum one-way delay of almost 240 milliseconds just because of the distance. LEO is much, much lower latency, which is critical for getting that sensor data back quickly.
And this isn't just a separate satellite network, is it? It's getting integrated with mobile standards.
That's a key point. It's being woven directly into things like 5G. The 5G system, or 5GS, and its new radio standard, NR, are explicitly being adapted to support what's called massive machine-type communication, or MMTC.
Okay.
And to incorporate non-terrestrial networks, NTNs,
space-based
networks. So global sensing becomes less tied to just ground-based cell towers in specific countries.
And we're already seeing companies build this LEO infrastructure.
Definitely. There are several examples. Astrocast, for instance, is deploying a constellation of 80 EO nanosatellites. They use their own L-band frequency, optimized for direct-to-satellite IoT, and they're aiming for pretty low latency, under 15 minutes for message delivery.
Okay. Others?
You've got Myriota using nanosats in UHF or VHF bands. They offer maybe 4 satellite passes per day, so less frequent coverage perhaps.
Right.
And then there's Lacuna Space, which uses a LoRa-based system. Their satellites basically act as flying gateways for LoRa sensors on the ground.
That sounds efficient. Any drawbacks?
The main one noted is that it's currently a unidirectional system, meaning data only goes up from the sensor to the satellite, uplink only.
So the sensor can't receive commands back easily.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it can mean delays, potentially minutes, before a message collected by the satellite actually gets downloaded to an Earth station. For really time-critical intelligence, that delay could be a significant limitation.
So this huge commercial push into space, putting up potentially thousands of these small satellites, that must be running into some regulatory hurdles.
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the major perils identified. Getting authorization for these new satellite networks, especially small satellite constellations, through the International Telecommunication Union, the ITU is described as a lengthy and cumbersome process.
How lengthy?
Our sources say it can take anywhere from 9 months on the fast end up to potentially 7 years.
7 years? Wow. That seems completely out of sync with the speed of commercial tech development.
It really highlights the friction. It's like regulators trying to apply old rules to a completely new type of space race.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the whole challenge of spectrum harmonization.
Meaning making sure the signals don't interfere?
Yes. And also ensuring a device can legally operate worldwide. A sensor, or its satellite link, needs to be able to adapt its radio signals based on local rules, like switching between European CEPT standards and US FCC standards as it moves. That's complex for a global LEO network.
So while the tech is racing ahead towards global ubiquitous sensing,
the policy and the regulatory frameworks are definitely playing catch up, fundamentally.
So let's pull this all together. What we've sketched out here is this incredible picture of a modern, commercially driven ISR stack.
Yeah, we started on the ground with data flowing from city sensors, citizen apps, all collected and processed right at the edge in places like that Avero Tech City Living Lab. Real-time understanding.
Right. And then that intelligence gets fused with insights from above, from these incredibly sophisticated AI models that are extracting precise infrastructure details, like building footprints, even 3D shapes, from commercial satellite images.
And doing it with remarkable accuracy. Remember that 0.81 F1 score and efficiency getting near LiDAR quality with hardly any manual data labeling needed, thanks to techniques like semi-supervised learning.
And the final piece is the connective tissue, this emerging global network of commercial LEO satellites being integrated right into 5G standards, designed to transport all this sensor data from anywhere.
The convergence is happening incredibly fast, and the implication is pretty stark. Critical, highly accurate security intelligence is, well, it's no longer just the exclusive playground of nation states with massive budgets.
It can be derived almost instantly and relatively cheaply from these open source or commercially available data streams.
Which brings us to the really crucial question we need to leave you, the listener, with.
How do we adapt? How should policy, ethics, security protocols, how should they change when detailed, large-scale ISR, the kind that can map every building's exact footprint and 3D structure in a city with high accuracy, can be pulled together and shared using commercial systems available to almost anyone?
It's a profound strategic challenge to think about.
Definitely something to reflect on. Thanks for diving deep with us today.
Remember, you can find more strategic security policy insight over at thesecuritynexus.net.
We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.